Have you ever come across an odd myth, strange story, weird history, or something that just made you scratch your head and say to yourself, you know, I'd love to know a little bit more about that? Well, you're in luck, and you're in the right place listening to the right podcast, because this is The Story Of. Welcome to the next episode of the Story Of Podcast. I'm Smith.
I'm Mike.
I'm Joe.
And I'm Bill.
Yeah, man. Welcome back, man. This is the first installment that we've had this particular crew on. Bill's been gone a little while. Bill, welcome back, man. We're glad to have you.
I was aching to get back, and I was really upset I missed certain topics. But, you know, it is what it is. You guys held it down, and I'm really looking forward to hearing those episodes.
Yeah, man. Well, we had an addition to the group in Joe. So this is the two of you, your first time corresponding through the podcast. So, I think the chemistry will be just fine. Hope I didn't make things weird right there. Sorry about that.
Get it?
Yeah, that's right. Joe's a chemistry teacher. I did that on purpose. That's why I made that joke. Yeah. So, all right. So this week we are going to tackle weird jobs. Just some weird jobs. It doesn't necessarily have to be old. It could be, you know, it could be new jobs. Doesn't whatever, man. Just some weird jobs. So in honor of Bill coming back for the first time in a few episodes, we asked Bill if he'd like to start us off. So Bill, you're up, buddy.
Yeah, I'd love to. I actually really like this one. I had trouble actually just landing on one. So I got a couple of different ones here for you. Some we'll spend more time on than others. First one I came across, a lot of mine take place in medieval times. So you know this shit's going to be fucked up, just to let you know. Really weird shit. One of the ones I came across was a dog whipper. Now, you ever hear of this dog whipper?
No.
Back in the day, people had pets. So not everybody would, you know, keep their dogs caged up. You know, they didn't have fences. You know, these dogs would just roam around. But also for thousands of years, you've had churches. So everybody went to church. So the church would hire people called dog whippers. And these dogs were so loyal that they would follow their owners everywhere, including the church. But they weren't allowed in the church. So they armed these people with whips to whip the shit out of these dogs to get them out of the church. And that was their main job. They would stand by the door, see a dog coming. If they couldn't intimidate it enough to leave and it got in, they would chase it around the church while the sermon's going on and whip the shit out of these dogs. Get the fuck out of here. I mean, like,
I hate like laughing at dog abuse, but I'm picturing this overhead. You know what I mean? Just looking down and watching this happen. And, you know, like the sermon is going on. There's some dude running around after a dog.
Not just one, like probably like four or five.
Well, that's a crazy church. But imagine it's your dog. Like, what do you do? Do you just allow this person to go at, like, do you get involved? Like, how does this do? You know
They're
what I mean?
Like, embarrassed. You're like, I don't know that dog. I don't know who dog
that
is.
I think how I would play it off too. Like, whose dog is that? It's not my dog.
This is crazy.
whose dog is that?
Honey, did you lock the fucking door?
I don't know why churches have to be anti-dog. Why can't the dogs just sit there and listen? I don't know.
Well, back in that time, I mean, there was quite a bit of different human beings they wouldn't allow in a church.
Let's be honest. Dogs are stretched. You're right.
You know, yes. Yeah. But yeah, that's a shitty job though. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, you gotta hold that on.
Dog lover.
Yeah, that's not, that's a shitty job. That definitely is. That's not cool.
That was one of the ones I came across. There wasn't too much detail I can get into that. You know, a dog whipper is a dog whipper. I mean, that's about all you got. It happened in the medieval times. That's what you got. But right. Another one I came across, this one will take a little bit more time, was called a whipping boy.
So you went with the whips. Your common theme was whips here.
You're diving into my personal affair right now. But anyway.
Was it chips, dips, chains, and whips, right?
You know it, man. So... Now, you've heard the term, obviously, right? We've all heard the term whipping boy.
Whipping boy.
Any idea, Smith? I'm sure. I think you might have read into this, but either Joe, Mike, you know what this is?
No, I've heard it. I don't know what it is.
When a prince is born, it's said that the only person that could discipline a prince is the king. Now, that the king and the prince, you know, the king's not sitting there watching the prince the whole time. The prince has, you know, the people that are watching him. So what they would do was, since they couldn't, you know, do anything, you know, discipline the young prince, at a young age, they would pair the prince with another boy. And they would grow up together and really care for each other, like best friends growing up. And whenever they would need to discipline the prince, they take it out on his little buddy.
Beat the shit out of his friend.
He would beat the crap out of this little kid in front of him, like, because of what the prince did. So if this entitled little prince was going around being a prick, they would whip the shit out of this other kid. Like, look what you're doing to your little kid, huh? Your little friend. Look what I'm doing to him because of you. You know, it'd be like...
It's crazy.
Seriously.
But you know, though, like, you know, some of those princes, some of those princes were little shits. We grew up with those fuckers. You know what I mean? Like, you get into a fight with your best friend and you just, like, you take a piece of the china and you just... And the kid's like, oh, fuck you. Like, that's a fucked up job, man. Where do they get this kid from?
Don't know. I think
it was an orphanage.
They were actually, from what I remember reading, was that they were always the child of somebody in high society too. So somebody that was up in the ranks along, you know, maybe the kid, the king's bard. I don't know. But somebody that was always, you know, associated with the king.
It's probably a privilege.
Yeah, oh, for sure. But a lot of these guys, a lot of these kids would grow up and they would actually become like high-ranking knights because they were well-respected from the prince because they grew up as best friends. So there was a payday at the end of it, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely a way to definitely sow some trust, right, within the royal family. That's definitely a plus for your future. It's
What's the psychology of this? Do you think, like, did this work?
Apparently.
If you think about it, though, I mean, could it help build empathy within a child? Sure, possibly. Or could backfire completely. You could create a little psychopath, right? You know, that. So that's a possibility. I mean, I guess it depends on it's nature versus nurture, man. Nature versus nurture.
Mm. That's wild. I never heard that before.
If they have that relationship, They're close together, almost like as if they're brothers.
Yeah.
You know, just think about it. Even your own sibling, you know, if you knew that you did something wrong and then they were going to get an ass whooping for it, after a while, I mean, you probably do it once in a blue moon, but I mean, you wouldn't want to see them get hurt because you would know that it hurts them. And in part, you have to kind of watch it how it all happened too.
Yeah. And that's one thing. I mean, how much mischief do kids get in together, you know, and if they get caught, there's one of them's catching a whooping and the other one's just going to watch. Like
I truly wonder if there was any cases where the whipping boy just had enough and like took the prince out.
Maybe. I mean, it depends on if the prince was a little shit, right? Yeah, I mean, exactly. The prince is a little shit, but I mean, if you think about it, it is a good way of kind of, I don't want to say good way, but it's a way of teaching that actions have consequences and your actions, especially if it's a prince, right? And that person's going to be possibly a king one day, that your actions affect other people's lives.
Yeah,
true.
It is a way to instill that within them. So I guess I get the psychology. It's a different world back then. If that just happened today, it would just be completely unnecessary and there'd be no reason for it. It would just be really fucked up. It'd just be really, really wrong. All right, cool. Let me roll in and I'm gonna go in with one that's a similar strand. I found one called the Groom of the Stool. And the groom of the stool was a position invented by Henry VII during his reign to pretty much oversee every aspect of his kingdom while passing his bowel movements. He would sit on the shitter, on the john, and this individual was there as like his top advisor. And that's when his top advisor would come in and they would talk about economics and they would talk about the state of the kingdom and just kind of run everything around and talk about everything. And this person was really heavily involved in the king's diet specifically and would make sure that the king's eating well. And then, you know, after they're talking about the things that they would talk about, would go and inspect the aftermath to make sure that everything's looking good and, you know, it's a proper weight and the consistency as well to make sure that the king is doing well. And this was a very, very, very prestigious position, actually. It was, like, really good. It was, I mean, think about it. You get
to spend, it was great.
Yeah, you got time to have a good one-to-one talk with the king.
Shouldn't it be a two-to-two?
It could be a one-to-two. Who knows? You know?
Wait a minute. He checked, like, the weight. Like, he's picking up a log, and he's, like, shaking it to see if it's falling apart.
See if it bounces off the floor.
Yeah, at one point or another, he may have been like, let me just try this. Because I could really tell what the king is eating. If he's absorbing the proper nutrients.
I take my job very seriously.
Taking pieces off and, like, letting it fly away in the wind.
He's on the green. Yeah, and you know what? I think maybe the craziest part about this job was that it wasn't ended until 1901. This was going strong until King Edward VII in 1901 ended the practice.
And you know something? Something must have happened too for that to stop.
King Edward probably was just like, "This is just wait. I have to do what? Why? You know what? Why?" Why are you still here? Like, what is the meaning of this? You know, like, you may go on, my boy.
You know, we can talk without you having to have to do that. You know that, right?
Yeah, I mean, just come by later on. I mean, you just stand outside the door and yell, you know. But there are cases where the groom of the stool actually advanced up the line and became like dukes and things. You know, and became more, you know, had prestigious roles. So the groom of the stool.
I guess you would say he's been through some shit.
Yes.
In order to get that prestigious level.
He and the king have been through some shit together, you know, and.
I mean, I could bounce off that real quick if you want me to.
Take it away.
With my gong farmer. Gong farmer was kind of like the lower levels of the of what you had just described. His job, well, everybody shits, right?
Mm-hmm. We just read a book about that with my son.
And back then, you know, people just, you know, when they had to go, they, you know, they pull up to the outhouse or they pull up to whatever makeshift area they had and they would shit. And the gong farmer would be in charge of going around and just picking up human feces off the ground and collecting it.
Can you spell that for me? It's a what?
G-O-N-G farmer.
Like a gong. A gong. Like the big fucking, okay. Wow. Yeah. Like the gong show.
Yeah. Yeah. And it would be his job to clean out the outhouse shit traps. And a lot of people were shitting on the street too, because, you know, that's what you did in medieval times. So he'd be going around just scooping up shit.
Dropping the logs.
That was a lot of people would shit in a bucket and throw it out the window.
Believe it or not, they were looked down on by society.
They were,
but if you think about it, it's probably one of the most important jobs anybody ever had in that town.
Mm-hmm.
Sanitation.
Like, you think about how sick people would have been if they didn't have these things, or, you know, all the diseases that would have been just flowing through your town. If you didn't
they
have
had those diseases, they absolutely did, but you would think it would probably be a hell of a lot worse.
If you had a shitty gong farmer, then you got a lot of diseases in your town.
Ba-dum-tsh. Yes. He was, you don't want the number two gong farmer. You want the number one gong farmer.
Right.
Oh, shit.
Number one at number two.
That's right. That's right.
I like that we're off to the start of nothing but abuse and human excrement.
Yes.
We're off to a great start tonight.
Absolutely. Why would we not start that way?
All right. Well, it's a current job. It still exists today. It's pretty cool, but the job is not the cool part. We're going to talk about the history. We're going to talk about ravens, the bird, nice. Which I did a ridiculous deep dive on, and I found so much cool shit about ravens, and I'm like, I want to own a raven right now. So
it's fucking cool.
So ravens, if you don't know,
are black.
Look like they're black. They look like crows. They are not crows. They are in the same genus, I think, but they're different species. Okay. Ravens are much bigger. They are very intelligent. They're very territorial as well.
And they're only found in Baltimore, correct?
Well, my story takes place in England. But yeah, maybe maybe just in Baltimore.
Okay.
And they wear purple shirts for some reason. Yes. I don't know. Ravens can mimic humans. They can mimic sounds. They talk by mimicking. It is freaky.
Like a parrot?
Yeah, but like better than a parrot. And what? I was watching videos, and they're hysterical because the raven is like singing in the video. I thought it was the funniest thing in the world. Yeah, they play games. They make toys. They can take sticks and make toys to play with.
What are you talking about?
Raven. I'm telling you, it gets better. It keeps going.
Toys
gets
for who? Though who plays
for themselves?
With
they can the play fuck? With toys.
They entertain themselves with toys that they make. Why have I not heard of this before?
Yeah, nobody talks about that because the Ravens are going to take over the world and nobody wants to admit
that. Holy shit.
It's scary.
We should start that movement.
They play dead. They show empathy. They show jealousy. They show likeness, and they hold grudges as well. Yeah. They mate for life. And they are one of the only animals besides primates that can actually gesture like hands. They don't have hands, but they will use their beak to point at things. And outside of primates, like, no other animals do that, which I didn't know about. I thought that was really crazy.
That is nuts.
Ravens, when in groups, are called what, everybody? Does anybody know?
Murder.
No, that's a crow.
That's a crow. It's not a, is it a gaggle?
That's
no,
geese. Like, I'm teaching a little lesson today. I got lots of back and forth questions for you. So you can call them a flock. That's like a normal bird term is a flock. You can call them a rave of raven. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You can call them a treachery of raven.
Ooh, that's pretty cool.
It's even better. You can call them an unkindness. Unkindness.
That says an unkindness of ravens.
Or my absolute favorite, a conspiracy. You can call it a conspiracy.
Like, what the fuck? Who wrote the book on what do you call raven?
That's how evil these things are.
It's hilarious.
They probably came up with it like on a podcast.
That's your backstory on ravens. That's what I did for the past week. I was just deep diving, and I'm like, holy cow, just finding all this crazy shit about ravens.
You're in class, and you're just like, holy shit!
Did you know this?
Like, what? It's a treachery!
It's a treachery!
It's a conspiracy!
It's not a murder, though!
It's not a murder. They all said murder. I said, no, it's not a murder. You're wrong. So ravens are natural, common in London, in England. Mm. And they would nest in the Tower of London. Okay. The Tower of London, as you know, is a famous jail, a prison, a torture chamber, but also it holds, you know, the monarchies, the crown jewels, important documents, stuff like that. But ravens would always congregate at the Tower of London. So a myth started way back in the 1600s or 1500s, I couldn't get an exact date, that if the ravens ever left the tower, that the tower would fall and the monarchy would collapse, that the entire kingdom of England would collapse.
Mm.
So that was like an old wives' tale back then.
Well, thank God that didn't happen.
Yeah. Fast forward to 1675, King Charles II and his advisor, who's an astronomer, they have a telescope, they have an observatory in the Tower of London, and King Charles is complaining because there's so many ravens going back to shit, by the way, they're shitting all over the telescope and they can't do anything, and this really happened.
This treachery
of ravens is shitting all over the telescope. We can't make out observations. So they said, we got to get rid of the ravens, we got to annihilate them. And the advisor, the astronomer, says, you can't do that because if you get rid of the ravens, the tower is going to fall and the kingdom's going to fall. You're not allowed to do that. So King Charles says, okay, let's move the observatory. And the observatory was moved to Greenwich, England. And that's why Greenwich has the famous Greenwich Observatory, was because it was in the Tower of London and the ravens had to stay, so they had to move the observatory out of the Tower of London, and I never knew this.
Do you think that that was a conspiracy on the part of the ravens to move?
They probably planned that one. I think so.
Oh, yeah. Shit.
Pretty smart.
Starting to make sense now.
Starting to make sense, right? King Troll says, okay, we're going to make it a decree now. The Tower of London must always have six ravens. There must always be six ravens at the Tower of London forever, or else the kingdom's going to fall. They did that, and they had to make somebody take care of the ravens, hence my topic for tonight, the Raven Master.
Wow.
There is a gentleman who is a high-ranking soldier in the British military. They're called Beef Eaters. I don't know if you've heard.
Yes, I have heard of that.
Gin and stuff, those guys with the big robes and stuff. So Beef Eaters are specific to the Tower of London. They guard the Tower of London. They guard the prisoners when they were there. They guard the crown jewels. And there is one Beef Eater who is the Raven Master, and that's his job. He takes care of these ravens. He, you know, cares for them. He feeds them this and that. And that's his whole job. Beef Eaters live at the Tower of London. They have housing there. So he lives there with them. Here are the ravens that live there today. They have names, by the way. So
okay. Here
they are. There are eight ravens, two extra than the six mandatory. There's Jubilee, Harris, Grip, Erin, Poppy, Georgie, who they thought was a male. They called him George first, but then they found out he was a female, so they called him Georgie.
Okay.
Edgar and Branwyn. So those are the eight ravens that live there.
Wow.
And they're not just kept in cages. They do have cages for safekeeping, but they are allowed to roam the grounds of the Tower of London. So they're allowed to fly around and walk and hop and do whatever they do.
Make toys for the children.
Make toys for themselves. If you go visit, you're not allowed to touch them. They're very territorial. They will bite you if they feel attacked. They don't go after you, but they are very territorial. But they'll steal your food because they're scavenging birds. So if you leave food out, they will take your food.
And you can't touch them. That's a little fucker.
Yeah. They have the run of the mill.
Awesome.
Very cool. So here's something I learned for the first time today, and I'm embarrassed that I never knew this, okay? These birds live at the Tower of London, and they don't fly away. And obviously, the way they don't fly away is they say, oh, we clip their wings.
They clip the wings, yes.
Right? And I was like, okay, that makes sense. And then they showed a video on how they clip wings, and it's not, like, disturbing or gross or anything, but I, for my entire life, misunderstood what clipping wings meant. So I will, before I embarrass myself, I will ask you, gentlemen, do you know what happens when they clip wings of birds?
Yeah, they take the wing and then they take a hammer and they beat the fuck out of the wing.
Break the wing off, no.
Until they don't fly anymore.
That seems reasonable.
Yeah, close enough.
Right? I mean, that was obvious. That's the first thing that came to my head.
I always assumed that, like, they made a seam like halfway down the middle of the wing. Like they pretty much just made a slit halfway down the middle of the wing, so it can't catch the wind when they try to fly. That's why I always assumed it was.
Did they cut like a little snippet in the armpit? I don't know. That's what I'm thinking.
That way they can't catch the wind underneath. I think that's they pretty much like from the armpit down.
There will be no wind beneath the wings.
That's what I always assumed, but am I
you're wrong? All incorrect, like I was, which is good, makes good, me feel a little better.
Dude, wait, so you're telling me they don't beat the shit out of the wing with a hammer?
They do not. They do not break the wings. What they actually do is they clip the feathers, like certain feathers, and they kind of just trim them like a haircut, and that prevents the bird from being balanced, so it tries to fly, and then it can't because it's unbalanced, so it doesn't fly. My thought was, but like everyone, when I said this today, I was talking to my students about it. They all knew this. I thought,
you're still bullshit. They just told you they knew it. They're a bunch of fucking liars too, Joe.
How do they clip wings? And they're like, oh, they trim the feathers. I was like, really? I thought they clipped them. Like they put like clips and they held the wings together. That's what I thought. They clipped them.
All right, Joe.
Yours is worse than mine. At least I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? They bobby pins.
Yeah,
they bobby pin their wings to the side
together. That's why whenever I would see birds and they would flap their wings and they're like, oh, their wings are clipped. I'm like, wait, how are they flapping their wings if their wings
they're
are clipped?
Supposed
like,
to be stuck to their sides.
They just put the bird in a straitjacket.
Oh my God.
That's all right. Yeah. So I'm a science teacher and I'm almost 40 years old and I just found this out today. So yeah, that was
this season. We've all learned something new.
So I did anybody else catch the name Edgar? I thought that was
Edgar. Yeah. Yeah, for Poe. Right?
Very, very clever. I was thinking Martinez.
The Ravens are actually in these eight Ravens are enlisted in the military. They count as soldiers in the military, British military.
Wow.
So they can be disciplined and they can be excused from service as well. Here are some ways a Raven gets excused from service.
This is good.
This just took a turn.
One of them was dismissed for conduct unbecoming. What would a Raven do that would be conduct unbecoming? He was attacking the TV antennas at the Tower of London.
Dick.
So they had to excuse him. They took him out. They set him free.
Did they give him did they like warn him and then give him a written warning and then
excuse him? They probably did.
Because there's protocol to this shit. You just, one time, you got to give a guy a second chance.
When you say like that's it, like he's out, done, like no longer allowed to live there.
Lost his pension.
No, yeah, they didn't kill him. They just released him to the wild and he,
But what if he flies back? Do they have to swat him away and be like, you don't work here anymore. Get out of here.
Maybe at that point they shoot him down. I don't know what the
Well, he's not untouchable. Okay, keep going.
So here's another one. But going back to the empathy and faking death. So Ravens are very territorial and very friendly with each other. So they get close to each other. One Raven died. And another Raven saw that Raven was getting all the attention because he died. So he's like, oh, I'm going to fake my own death. So he faked his own death. He was getting a bunch of attention from everybody because they thought he was dead. When they tried to wake him up, he bit them. So they said, oh, that's it. You're out of service now too. You faked your own death and then you attacked the handler. So
fucking Sean, what a dickhead.
Retired him as well. Yeah.
That is great.
Wow.
Vladimir Putin visited the Tower of London in 2003, and one Raven said to him, good morning, and he was quite impressed with that.
It is not often when you hear the Raven say good morning. You know what I mean? It is not, it doesn't happen very often, especially not up in Russia. No.
Yeah. So back to the guy, the Raven Master is this high ranking military guy. You have to have a certain amount of years of service. You have to have an impeccable record, and then you get to become a beef eater first, and then within that,
impeccable. Well played, sir. Well played.
Well played.
The jokes are just writing themselves tonight.
Very good tonight. So yeah, if you ever go to the Tower of London, you will see ravens flying around. You're not allowed to touch them. You can take pictures of them. They might attack you because they're territorial. And they only respond to the Raven Master. Nobody else is allowed to call them or try to go towards them. Only he's like a Raven Whisperer. He's the only one.
So you said they clip their wings. So they don't fly around. They just stay in the tower?
Well, they can fly a little bit. He said that they fly enough that they can get on top of buildings and shit, but they don't fly away. They can't.
My question I'm wondering is what if you accidentally kill one of these ravens completely on? Am I going to jail for killing a soldier?
I would imagine so. Yeah,
right.
Court-martialed for that. I don't know.
That is crazy. You go to sit down and have your lunch. You're standing there, being one of those freaking jackasses, standing. Being one of the king's guards for
eating
2 hours,
fish and chips.
3 hours. You go get your fish and chips. You sit down on a fucking raven, and next thing you're getting kicked out of the army.
Well, these things are pretty big. I don't think you're going to sit on them. They're really,
really big.
They're decent sized ravens. All right.
Not as big as a Thunderbird, though.
Not as big as a Thunderbird.
Nice throwback.
Okay. Throwback.
All right. That was a good one, man.
So that's the Raven Master. He's still there today. They still exist and they will be for the foreseeable.
Do you know the current Raven Master's name?
Yes. It was, I didn't write it down. It was Christopher GIF or something like that. I forgot.
Fucking lame.
Yeah. But he lives
Chris there, the Raven Master.
He's the Raven Master.
The Raven Master, Chris. Like that. That's fucking lame. It should be like fucking, I don't know, like Bruce. You know what I mean? Like it should be like a fucking powerful name or something.
What about like Edgar again? Like Edgar.
Edgar would be fine. Sure. I would say so. You know, I'd even go with Alan. Alan would be acceptable. Sure. But like fucking Chris. Like, hello, my name's Chris. You know, I'm the Raven Master. You know, like, I don't know. I just don't find that to be like,
Well, when I step back from this, you have to remember this is an entire military position based on a superstition, right? Think about that.
Yeah.
That's kind of crazy.
It's ridiculous is what it is.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, that's fucking ridiculous.
So that makes it perfect for tonight's topic.
Fair enough.
I'm going to piggyback on top of yours real quick because I don't know if anybody else heard about this. Did anybody else see the story this past week about the drug smuggling pigeons?
No, sir, I did not.
Nope.
There's like pictures. You know, I'm going to try to see if I can pull it up here. That way you can see it.
Yes. Okay.
The pigeon. And it's got a backpack filled with crystal meth on it. And he was smuggling meth into a prison in British Columbia.
That's awesome. Wow.
I was like, amazing. Oh my God. I'm like, who thought of that?
So did the pigeons have like a coop in the prison? Because they always go back to their coop. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Just imagine, like, they're smuggling drugs into prison.
By bird.
Yeah. By bird. Birds aren't real.
Birds are not real.
We're going to do an episode on that. And that whole story is fucking funny.
Sorry.
Very funny. Yeah. Mike, you've got yours. I'm excited to hear this.
This is going to be good. You guys are going to like this one.
Let's do it.
Originally, the way I perceived the topic to be not just weird jobs, but I went with probably the most unwanted job I've ever heard of or ever thought of comprehending in my life. So the job is back in the 1970s, late 60s, New York City, Times Square, there were a lot of these peep shows.
Mm.
So men would go into these little booths. And they would handle their business to relieve their stress, if you know what I'm saying.
You really do a
Oh, I did. I was like, this has to be the worst job possibly in the history of mankind. Because it's not like a regular sanitation job. You know what you're going to find in there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's god awful.
Yeah.
And I mean, listen, I've never been to one of these places. You hear, everyone's heard horror stories about the things. I'm pretty sure COVID started in one of those places. All right. So then I said, okay, well, a lot of these places really aren't around anymore. So the last one that actually closed, I think it was back in 2017. It was literally like the last one. It was the last place that was kind of a holdout. And obviously, if you've been to New York City, if you've been to Times Square, it's nothing like it used to be.
Mm.
There used to be hookers on the corner, prostitutes, you know, drugs. Times Square was a very different place.
It's very family friendly now.
Exactly. It's literally like Disneyland of New York City. Like, it's all fun and games, and you could take pictures with puppets and fucking people dressed up like all types of weird things.
Naked cowboys.
Yeah, Naked Cowboy and Batman and Elmo and...
Mm-hmm.
Times Square is very different now, obviously. But then I was like, okay, well, this place closed back in 2017. And I said, okay, well, is there any of these places really left? Do people still, like, go to these places? So I decided it's time to do a job search. So I went on Indeed. I said, it's time to find a job.
Oh my God, this is the best research we've ever done on this fucking show. Fucking
phenomenal. I'm so impressed great. Right now.
Just wait. I was hysterical laughing at this because I said, this can't be real.
The show just went up a level. We just leveled up tonight. I'm sorry.
So I found one job. One.
What did you search?
Yeah, what was the search term? Like, what search terms did you use?
And where is this job?
My search term was sex booth cleaner.
Okay, fair enough. You didn't. So you didn't use as Bill would have put it.
Professional term is sex booth cleaner.
I'm going to give you guys one guess. If there's one place in this country where you're going to find this job, take a guess where you're going to find it.
Are we guessing state?
I'll start with the state. We'll go with that.
Okay.
Oh, man.
I got two. I think...
There's two that came to mind right away. I said, if I'm going to find it in one place, this one place would be kind of obvious. And the second one, I kind of thought about after the fact. Like, yeah, you probably would find one there.
Nevada?
That's what I thought. I thought it would be Nevada.
I thought Nevada, but I guess you don't...
Florida or Texas?
Florida.
Ding, ding, ding. You are correct.
Which one?
It is Florida.
Florida. Yeah,
why would it not be?
Everything. Anything goes in Florida, man.
It's listed as a janitor slash cleaner at an adult superstore. We're not going to give the name and location. This is what it is.
What's the starting pay?
I was going to say starting salary. Take a guess, gentlemen.
$45,000.
Hourly or
We're going to go hourly.
I'll go hourly. All right.
Minimum wage.
Well, even minimum wage, what, 15, 17?
I'd say $12.69.
Oh, I like the 69 cents. That's a good way to do it.
$17.
Starting salary is actually $15 an hour.
Wow. Okay.
$15 an hour.
I don't know if it's worth
it. In New York, I don't know if you know this, Dan, but that is minimum wage now.
Yes, I do. Well, we were just talking about that. I was just talking about that the other day. We're in North Carolina, we're still at $7.25.
That's insane.
For real?
Yeah.
Doesn't cost much to live there.
Right, that's another episode. Anyway.
It's a Republican General Assembly. What do you want?
What year is it there, too?
We are in 1973. Some would wish it was 1953.
Wow. I can't believe they're still out there.
So, all right, continue, Mike. So it's $15 an hour. It's located in good old Florida?
Yes.
Florida, not like Orlando or Miami, right?
What city?
It's in Disneyland. I don't want to give the wherewithal because I don't want people harassing this place and doing anything, but it's in Florida. It is a full-time position, just in case anybody's interested.
I would think so, yeah.
I got a good laugh out of this.
They're bennies?
Benefits. There's some benefits to working.
Yes, they're bennies.
Wow.
They give you dental, health insurance, vision.
You're gonna get an STD. I mean, yeah. It's given. You're gonna get an STD.
They do give you life insurance.
Okay.
And this is my favorite. You get paid time off.
Oh.
Okay.
Not terrible. Do you get to sample any products?
I was gonna say, do you get 50% off the products?
Do you get an employee discount?
Yes. Fucking totally worth it, boys. Totally worth it, man. There's got to be a fucking line down the street for this job. I mean, how many retired people there are that would want to make $15 an hour, man? Come on now.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I'm going to just bring you this little part, which I was reading about the job description. I'm only going to give you two sentences, and I was laughing my ass off. Two sentences from it. It's more than a job. It's a journey.
They really are writing themselves tonight, aren't they?
They really did.
It's right there. Oh my god.
Wait, was that LinkedIn?
Indeed.
Did you read the summary for us yet? Is there a job description? Like, do they really like kind of
we get the job responsibility?
Oh my god. The journey.
It's their training.
And then the last part of the summary ends with, for adults who love to play.
Oh my god. It's at the opposite end of the spectrum. Fucking Chuck E. Cheese, man.
Yeah.
Holy shit, where a kid can be a kid and now you go to this place and where adults love. Wow. So
this is, and it still gets better. This, because I was laughing my ass off as I'm reading this stuff.
I'm so proud of you. Like, so this
the job responsibility.
This is the winner right here.
Yeah.
The job responsibility. First and foremost, disinfect all surfaces, surface areas prior to procedure.
Prior to procedure?
That's what it says. Prior.
Is that how they refer to it as procedure?
Procedure.
Okay.
Oh my God, this is gold.
You have to sweep and vacuum and mop the floors. I said, well, the mopping is quite obvious.
Yeah, Bill talked about that.
You have to clean and dust the store fixtures and merchandise.
Okay.
Dusting dildos.
Go dust the dildos, please.
Oh, don't forget, you have to also empty the trash cans.
Okay.
You have to clean and disinfect the booth.
There it is.
Clean and disinfect the bathrooms.
What's worse?
I don't know.
There are some sick fucks out there. You don't know, man.
Right. This is fun. We're going to get to the job requirements.
Oh, yes.
Please. $15 an hour. There are requirements, sir.
Do I need a college degree?
Well, they recommend must pass a background check.
Well, that's why they can't fill the position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't be a sex offender yet. That's right. Good call. They fucked themselves on that job, man.
Yeah, that's why they can't fill it.
You must have 2+ years of cleaning experience.
What does that even mean? I cleaned my room as a kid. I don't like what the fuck does that mean?
Exactly. I cleaned my room when I was a kid.
I help my mom do dishes down every night. I do dishes at home. Is that good?
Oh my God.
A high school diploma or equivalency.
Really?
Okay.
Okay.
Really need a fucking high school diploma?
Why they can't fill the position.
And you must have reliable transportation to and from work.
I think it's fair enough.
Given. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think that's too much to ask.
I agree with that one.
In a different section, benefits and perks, they guarantee you Sundays off.
It's the Lord's Day.
Well, are they closed on Sunday?
I guarantee they're closed.
I mean, that's the time you really want to get in there and do a deep clean is when nobody's in there.
That's what I would think, right? That would be the day to really get in there and scrub hard.
With a toothbrush, you know? Oh, my God, Mike, that's great.
That was awesome.
That was beautiful. Just...
And absolutely. The deep dive too with the job search. That's...
Oh, he went to Indeed. That bro, that Bravo. Was just fantastic.
Bro, I would give you that job in a second.
Yeah, dude, I think you earned it. I think you earned it. Might be a little bit of a downgrade from where you are now, but I mean,
yes, you know. Just a tad, you know. So, and the reason why I said this has got to be something that we need to talk about is because not only is this just a horrible job and just imagine your existence is this is what your life is that it's pretty rough, man.
Mm-hmm. Like this is all of the decisions that you have made in life have brought you there, right? Exactly. That's where you made it.
Like is that some kid's like first job out of high school, you think? Like,
no,
I need to make some spare money and I have a high school education now.
You know what? That's somebody's cousin who lives in his mom's basement who needs to go get a job, and he's really lazy.
The other thing I want to share with you. So as I was doing this, I was like, well, what kind of people go to these places? And I actually started reading people's, I guess, their blogs or like their own like message boards, and I was reading one. And this woman described on how she met her husband. Like, they're obviously married and, you know, they have a regular life at home. But, like, she would send him there and then she would meet him there. Like, they'd have, like, their room picked out of where they were going to go. And then they would have sex inside that booth as they're watching someone, I guess, dancing or doing whatever the fuck they do in these things.
Wow.
And she was describing how it was the most intense feeling, like sexual pleasure from it. I was just like, holy shit, what is there's some dark fucking people in this world.
I have no words for this. I can't.
I can't knock them, dude. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, if that's what floats your boat, man, shit. Yeah. More credit to you. That's impressive. Like, shit, man.
Like, wow. And this was like their thing now. Like that, their thing was going to a sex booth to go fuck around with each other,
and then they tell the world about it. Like that's even
obviously they're discreet about it online. Like nobody knows who they are, but the fact that like you did it and then shared your story about it, I was like, yo, this is some crazy shit going on out there.
Yes, there is. Yeah.
I mean, listen, they're not terrible, but
it's not that I'm speechless. I just have so many words trying to come out at the same time.
Still a bottleneck.
Yeah.
Well, all right. So I can follow it up with a shorter one. Okay. That I can do. So let's go to my other short one. This one was a position that was created back in ancient Rome. You know, we had we have party planners and all these other types of planners that go out and they try to create special experiences or events or things like that, and they're valid career choices. Well, this particular planner was employed by the wealthy folks of ancient Rome, and their job was to plan out and find, you know, food and music and accommodations and women while they were planning massive orgies for the rich folks in Rome. And their job was to put this whole thing together. And considering that Nero was famous for having orgies that lasted as long as 12 hours, that is why they needed somebody that would had every step of the way to put it together and create these massive orgies for all the rich folks in Rome. So I feel like that's an appropriate.
The next time I meet somebody who tells me they're a party planner, I'm going to tell them the origin of their job.
There you go. You're an orgy planner? Yeah, that's cool.
Mine is the sin eater. Right now, again, mine takes place in medieval times. They're all eating lead and shit, so they're out of their fucking minds. So anyway, mm-hmm. It was believed, well, that when somebody died, they would call in these people called the sin eaters. And what it was when they would lay these people out, tradition would be to place a loaf of bread and some food and a cup of beer on their chest of the corpse. And it was believed that this food would absorb all the sins that they had. And the sin eater was hired to then eat the food to take the sins away from the dead person, and it would allow their spirit to ascend. Yeah. So, what's really fucked up is like these people would then be looked down upon because their sins, their souls were tainted. So they would be shunned from society for doing mm-hmm. this job. They'd be considered outcasts. They were paid a small stipend and given a free meal out of it. Well, you got to imagine a lot of these people were probably poverty. You know, these poor people.
That's what I was going to say. A lot of these people are poor, exactly. Right? So they're not going to turn down a free meal.
But this is what these people believed back in the day. So I don't know. I thought that was pretty interesting. I can't imagine, you know, laying out some food and some guy just snacking on my dad's chest while, you know, he's laying in a fucking coffin.
And the family's got to be like, and thank you so much for doing this for our brother.
Get the fuck we out. Really don't touch anybody on your way out. Sin.
Right. And then as he leaves, they're like, sin eater. You know, and like, he's full of sin. He eats it. You know what I mean? Like, that's just terrible. It's an awful fucking job. I did read up upon that once, and I think they kind of stopped it because they realized that it's just absolutely fucking ridiculous. It's just, you know what I mean? It's just fucking absurd. And they were kind of like, I think we could stop the sin eating. And they did. You know? Yeah. Good job, man. I like that one. And all right, so I'll close this out, right? I'll close that. Nobody else. That's it. I think we've gone through them all. Okay, so mine is I love this fucking job. I have thought hard about this job for years. This job at one point had consumed a lot of my time and a lot of my thoughts. So I'm going to start off real quick. It's just throw out some answers. How do some people flex their status these days? What are some ways that
car
modern human beings flex their status?
Big house.
Car. Hose. Yeah, absolutely. What else?
Boots and hose.
Clothes.
Running a podcast.
Running a podcast. We're all flexing our status right now. Absolutely. Yes, we are, right? And
yeah, subscribers I have.
Yes. Those podcasters that have Patreons, right? And they pay for the special content and shit. So yeah, I mean it's this job that I'm gonna talk about is a complete and total flex. It existed for one reason and one reason only, and that is to show status, and that is it. It literally was a flex and nothing more. And as I stated, I have been aware of this job for some time. In fact, Bill and I began adapting this job into a story many, many years ago. And so, like I said, like needless to say, I've been fascinated by this occupation for quite some time. And so, ladies and gentlemen, I give you the ornamental hermit. Now, nowadays, as we had stated, right? You know, if somebody like now today, like, you know, flexed their garden, you might find like a fountain, right? Or some expensive shrubbery, right? Or maybe even they just hire a gardener right? You have your own gardener. That's a flex, right? But the Georgians, no. They went that extra mile. They went the whole nine, if you will, right? They would hire a hermit, a human being to live and tend to their garden. But that by itself, you know, it's kind of boring, right? And so they needed to outdo each other. So they got creative, right? So they would hire these hired hermits. They would live in shacks and caves and hermitages, right? But apparently, like, so let's go back a little bit. So the concept goes back to ancient Rome. Hadrian, the Emperor Hadrian, had a villa in Tivoli, which included a small lake that had like a little island in the middle of the lake. And it had a structure that was built for one person to retreat to. And so when, you know, life would be too hard as the emperor, right, he'd go to his own spot, right? And eventually, like, one of the popes, when they unearthed his hermitage, somebody had said to the pope, hey, you should, like, have your own hermitage. And there is still one in the Vatican that is built off on the side of the palace where the pope can retire to every once in a while when things get too popish, right? So, you know, at this time, though, there were true hermits, right? There were real people, those who shunned society, and they would live in isolation to pursue higher spiritual enlightenment. And, you know, it had been a part of the religious landscape of Britain for centuries, right? So the idea of hermits were not anything new, but it was this idea. You know, and as Pope Pius the Ninth built one for himself. But an ornamental hermit was something brand new. This was something that was completely, you know, authentic and unique unto itself. So originally, though, in my research, I found that the first thing, it's like the chicken or the egg, right? The hermitage came first. And so the Georgian English elites began to move away from this perfectly manicured gardens that you would see in like France. Think like the Palace of Versailles, right? The world famous, you know, garden at the Palace of Versailles where everything is cut symmetrically beautiful and there's rows of all these gorgeous flowers and all that. So the English start to get away from these incredibly manicured gardens and they would have them, you know, their gardens, quote unquote, would be more natural landscapes with like winding paths through the woods. And they would kind of slink past these like little hidden lakes and ponds, and they'd often be dotted with hermitages, right? And they would have like these fake ruins within there, and they would call them follies, right? Fake ancient ruins, you know, that people would walk by on their Sunday walks, you know, look at those ancient ruins over there. I wonder how long they've been there, right? And like, you know, so they would build these like little hermitages. So the next best thing, obviously, the next logical step would be you fucking populate them. You put people inside of these little hermitages. There's a man named Gordon Campbell. He wrote a book. He's a professor of Renaissance studies at the University of Leicester. And so he just published a book called The Hermit in the Garden, from Imperial Rome to Ornamental Gnome. And he states, recruiting a hermit, and I quote, wasn't always easy. Sometimes they were agricultural workers and they were dressed in a costume, often in a druid's costume. There was no agreement on how druids dressed, but in some cases they wore what we would call a dunce's cap. It's a most peculiar phenomenon, and understanding it is one of the reasons why I have written this book. So they would wear this cone hat, right? Like what nowadays...
This is where garden gnomes come from. I just figured this out.
This is where garden gnomes come from. Yes.
Wow. Holy cow.
Yes. So wow. There was an advertisement in Sir William Gell's A Tour in the Lakes made in 1797. They had such weird names for books back then, right? And he states,
The hermit is never to leave the place or hold conversation with anyone for 7 years, during which he is neither to wash himself or cleanse himself in any way whatever, but is to let his hair and nails, both on his feet and hands, grow as long as nature will permit them. So this dude, he had a 7-year contract, and his job for 7 years was to meander along in this garden. And he would have his own hermitage, right? And his job was to let his hair and his beard and his nails grow, and he could never clean himself at all. And, you know, if he was not, it was depending on the contract, right, that you signed. But some were not allowed to speak to anyone, right? You weren't allowed to talk to anyone. But others had some more peculiar job requirements. So one job requirement in particular was when somebody would be strolling through the garden and they would walk past the hermit would have to stop and jump into a pose like a statue and wait until they were done talking and walking. And when they got to walk away, he could then unfreeze from his pose and continue doing what it was that he did, right? Until the next person came by, and then he'd have to freeze in a pose again, wait, and they would leave, and then he could go about his business, right? And I always just imagine like this kind of like old, you know, Romanesque type of, you know, pose. And it just struck me silly as just so fucking
absurd.
He's
really not lying. Like, whenever we've talked about this in the past, he's always made that same pose. Yeah, he always does that.
Yes, it's been like that for like 20 years. So others asked that the hermits wear no shoes, right? Or they would even ask to entertain party guests and write poetry and come over and recite your special hermit poetry and pour drinks for the guests and just kind of meander. One hermit apparently sat for 14 years in a cave on the grounds of Lord Hill's father, and he had an hourglass in his hand and a beard belonging to an old goat. And from sunrise to sunset, with orders to accept no half crowns from visitors, but to behave like Giordano Bruno, who was a Italian philosopher. So this man had to pretend he was this Italian philosopher and hold an hourglass in his hand with a giant beard and just give out like Italian philosophical advice to people as they came into his hermitage. There was another one that they would set up the room and they would sit with a skull and an hourglass. And it was to ponder mortality and time. And their job was to sit there and really look like they were deep in thought, like they were just philosophizing as people would walk by. And that was their job. Because in this time period, melancholy was a very, very popular thing at this time period. This kind of, it was almost like, you know, have deep sadness, and stoicism was like the in thing. And so to have this melancholy hermit just walking around pondering the mysteries of life was like, it was like, that was like the thing in that time period.
Like the goth kids.
Absolutely. Yes, it's definitely the precursor to the goth kids for sure. There was the honorable Charles Hamilton placed an ad after buying Paintshall Park. Hamilton created a lake. He created grottos, a Chinese bridge, temple, and a hermitage on his estate. Then he placed an ad for the hermit to live there for 7 years in exchange for about 700 pounds. Again, that time was about $900. In today's money, 77,000. So pretty good payoff. 77 grand for, you know, and that's, I don't know, 77,000 for 7 years worth of work. I don't know, maybe not. But other than, I don't know, pretending to be an Italian philosopher, a fucking hard job, man. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. They didn't get paid until after the 7 years also.
Absolutely, yeah.
They had to wait till the 7th year was up before they got any money.
Yes. So in this particular case, unfortunately, they finally found an applicant. Right, they got him and he got the job. And one of the things was you were not allowed to leave the estate, right? Once you signed that contract, you were there, boom, that was it. And the problem with this one was, after 3 weeks, the owner of the estate went into a bar and there was his hermit having a drink and talking with everybody. So he was relieved of his role immediately. And I don't think he had been replaced either. So it wasn't a really easy job to find hermits at that time. There was. This is a passage from a 1784 guide to the Hawkstone Estate in Shropshire, belonging to Sir Richard Hill. He describes its resident hermit. His name was Father Francis.
So you pull a bell and gain admittance. The hermit is generally sitting in posture, with a table before him, on which is a skull, the emblem of mortality, an hourglass, a book, and a pair of spectacles. The venerable barefooted father, whose name is Francis, if awake, always rises up at the approach of strangers. He seems about 90 years of age, yet has all his sense to admiration. He is tolerably conversant and far from being unpolite. That was a little bit of Father Francis. When a nobleman was unable to attract a real hermit to reside in his hermitage, there was a couple of things that he could do. 1763, there was a botanist named Gilbert White. He managed to persuade his brother, the Reverend Henry White, to kind of put away or put aside his reverendness and pose as a wizened sage at Gilbert's Selborne estate for the amusement of his guests. So his brother would step in to be the hermit every once in a while. In which there was a woman, Miss Catherine Batty, who went on to speak about her experience.
In the middle of tea, we had a visit from the old hermit. His appearance made me start. He sat some with us and then went away after tea, and we went into the woods, returned to the hermitage to see it by lamplight. It looked sweetly indeed. Never shall I forget the happiness of this day.
So Catherine had a really good time with that as well. If, you know, you didn't have a brother that was available, guard owners, they could furnish the hermitage with the traditional hermit accessories, with the hourglass and the book and the glasses, so that when somebody would walk by, it looked like the hermit had just popped out for a second. You know, he's out back having a smoke or something, you know, so, oh, my hermit is not here. He's probably tending to the garden. So, you know, again, like, as we said, that is the precursor to the garden gnome. However, today, as of April 2017, there is a new hermit, 58-year-old Stan Van Utrecht. He moved into a hermitage in Soften, Austria, high up in the mountains, and 50 people applied for this position, despite the lack of internet, running water, heat, anything like that. This hermitage has been continuously inhabited for the last 350 years, and he is the new hermit that now lives there. And yes, absolutely, you can go visit him there up in Saffelden, Austria, and you can go visit this hermit and go sit with him and learn his wisely hermit knowledge from there. So yes,
it's the only hermit job you found.
That is it.
I get on Indeed now.
I'm going on Indeed.
Other than that one, and I quote, the garden hermit evolved from the antiquarian druid and eventually declined into the garden gnome. And that is where we are now, except for Stan. Stan, the last living ornamental hermit living up in the mountains in Austria. So there is my last one. I have been waiting to talk about the ornamental hermit for years. I love that fucking job. And if I could have that, if I didn't have a wife and a kid, I totally would. That's so fucking worth it.
You would. I think you'd be good at it too.
I would definitely do it. But you gotta like learn, you know, I mean, you gotta learn to be alone, right? There's a lot of big learning curve to that. You gotta learn to live alone. You gotta learn to sit in a fucking cave a long time and a lot, you know? So my back problems probably wouldn't be all that good for it though, you know?
So now if the hermit's there, do they, I guess they provide food for them?
I don't know.
Medical care, facility to go to the bathroom at least.
When we did the research, everything was provided for them.
Yes.
But they also lived off the land.
So you're talking about the Jord hermits, Mike? That's what you're asking?
No, I'm just any one of the hermits in particular. Like, would they be given food? And
yes, the estate would provide them with the food. Yeah, and everything they needed. Not clothing, because you got that one pair of clothes, and there you go, and that's about it. But I had read that there were places that, you know, they would prefer that the hermit, you know, made their own food and things, because it would just look a little bit more real. But they were like, all right, fine, we'll give you food. That's okay. You know, and so they would, yes, the food and all of the necessities.
They never went in the houses. They never went, you know, nothing like that. They would never sit at the table with the people who owned, you know, who paid them. Nothing like that.
Nope. Not one.
That makes sense.
And scene. Nice.
I got a good question, and I think this is probably the only way that we could really end this episode. If there was one job that we've discussed tonight
that we should bring back, or there is a potential to bring back and to make it a real job again? Which one would it be?
Dog whipper.
Something tells me society would not like that, Bill.
I know.
Feel like, man, I don't know, bro. I think the I think there would be a real market for the whipping boy with the evangelicals down south, man. I think the whipping boy could definitely come back in the deep south for sure.
But remember what you said about it. The whipping boy, you know, they grew up with the kid together. It's not really like, you know, it was to really teach the kid empathy was what it was all about. And then whoever this whipping boy was would then be someone of higher stature.
You know, I'm going to have to go with a hermit, man. I think
I could see like very bohemian hipster environments.
Elon Musk would definitely have a fucking hermit. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, he is definitely the type of prick that would have one for sure.
Here you go. We kind of have these modern day hermits.
Do tell.
Who are they? They're the homeless people that are out on the streets.
Good point.
They're just not in a garden.
And nobody pays
they're
them.
They're all over the place. They're kind of, you know, they're dirty. They're unkept. You know, they're trying to scrounge for food. And it's fucked up that we live in a world, especially in this country, where there's plenty of fucking food to feed everybody.
Yeah.
But some people just have to have too much of it.
Yeah.
And there's people that don't have anything. It's such a disparity.
Absolutely. Well, how does one feel better about themselves, right? That human beings feel better about themselves when they compare themselves to others who don't have what they have.
That's true.
You know, and that's how somebody feels. A lot of times that's how people, you know, measure their self-worth, right? Is to say, well, hey, at least I'm not that bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, true. Look, there's easily a way to fix homelessness.
Yeah.
People just don't want.
I'm sorry. I would be fucking entertained. Like, oh, come over to my house.
Uh-huh.
I have a hermit.
Yeah.
No shit. You got a hermit? I need to see this motherfucker.
Yeah. Right. Like, can we hang out with him?
Long fucking beard.
Well, I was gonna ask about this because it's a very fine line between this being somebody's job and slavery. So you have to guarantee here that this is a job.
There is a contract. Yeah,
you want the contract in triplet, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. Just enslaving them for your entertainment. That's...
Well, I read an article about the hermit in the Atlantic, and the article, it's a long article, and it's all about the author really explaining why hermits should come back and how he would do this if he had the ability to bring hermits back. And he's very, very, very clear on this must be an agreed upon contract. And that if this person ever wanted to get out of this contract, it must be canceled immediately, right? Like this person should have the ability to break this contract on their end at any point. If they are feeling any sort of mental or emotional discomfort, this is just not what I thought it was going to be. I'm losing my fucking mind. You know, this person should be able to back out, you know, without any issues. But it was a really interesting read. This guy put some serious thought into it about, you know, like, how can we bring hermits back into the mainstay, you know?
You know, as you're telling me the story about this guy in Austria living in the fucking mountains as a hermit, I'm intrigued. Mm-hmm. Like, the fact that he's there right now, probably not listening to this podcast. Some job recognition.
Imagine if he was, right? Stan,
oh, that'd be amazing.
You. You know, like that would be great, you know, like, but regardless, yeah, there is like, he's out there just doing his thing and you can go visit him like that.
Yeah.
Fucking cool. You know
what? I mean, think about it, man. You've given up the basics of the things that hold us down in life as far as technology, worrying about money.
Yeah.
Responsibility. If you could tend to just making sure your plants are growing.
Yeah.
You wake up whenever you want, you roam around wherever you want, but this is your home. This is where you stay.
You get to live in the mountains of Austria. That's pretty fucking awesome. Yeah. Like that. That's beautiful.
It doesn't sound horrible. I mean, actually it sounds a bit of a relief from the regular stress and strain of life. As we all have to get up and go to work.
Yeah, he knows more about life, real life, than we'll ever fucking learn. You know what I mean? I think that guy is gonna, well, sure as shit, hit the enlightenment phase way before most of us will.
Almost like monkish, like a monk.
Why don't we flip the script here and say, we will open a hermitage, and you pay us and you can live like a hermit for as long as you want on our land, but you're paying us. It's like a hermit vacation. No technology, no running water.
It's like an Airbnb.
We provide you nothing.
We provide you, well, maybe food, and you pay us money.
Yeah, we'll give you a fucking bed and a tent in my backyard, and you can go. Yeah, you're going to pay me to
You know how many hipsters would jump on that? Yeah,
oh,
man.
Yeah, man, like, absolutely. Yeah.
I'll bring you Lunchables every day.
No overhead.
No overhead.
It's
no
overhead. It would be edgy. It would be really edgy to do that, you know. And
you get a lot of hipsters.
Yeah.
A lot of hipsters.
Just want a vacation off the grid. We just fucking hermit it up.
That's
yeah, we could charge. We'd be the only for-profit hermitage. We would have the monopoly.
Bro, we'd make like tens of dollars a year, you know? Like tens of dollars. All right, gentlemen. I think we hit this one pretty hard. I think we did a great job. I liked this episode. This was a lot of fun. So until next time out there, folks, from the guys over here at the Story of Podcast, stay out there, stay you, stay weird. There's more history than what's in the books. Adios, fuckers.